We're going to take your phone calls with Jeffrey Smith. I want to talk with him a little bit about the bee colonies and what's going on there. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Jeffrey Smith with us. Jeffrey, updates on the bee colonies. Are they still dying around the planet?
They are, and now we have more evidence that Monsanto is involved. Turns out the fingers are being pointed for years at neonicotinoid insecticides. These are nicotine-derived insecticides that are coated on the seeds, and they end up being released over time. They're like time-released poisons. And we know that the bees can lose their orientation and not find their way back to the hive, and they've been banned, several of them, in Europe. But the thing is, the neonicotinoid theory does not explain everything. If you go on our site, responsibletechnology.org, right in the blog on the home page, we have a 5-minute video by an expert at Roundup who points out that these bees have three different characteristics that can't be explained by the neonicotinoids alone, and that Roundup, in fact, may be the big culprit. Now, just this week, new information came out that Roundup, or its active ingredient glyphosate, can interfere with the bee's ability to navigate back to the hive.
Jeez.
There's also another study that shows that the amount of Roundup that's basically in the atmosphere and in agricultural lands is enough to kill 34% of the bees in a hive based on one experiment. So it's possible that glyphosate is a smoking gun, but there's an organization called Biologics that had been investigating the causes of colony collapse disorder, and that organization was purchased by Monsanto. So it raises the question, did Monsanto buy the organization so that they would redirect the research or hide the research that they'd already found so that their own glyphosate-based Roundup would not be implicated? So a lot of people know about neonicotinoids. I think we need to start talking about Roundup. And I would suggest that not only watch the 5-minute video, which I interview Dr. Don Huber, but also share that with as many people as possible, because President Obama has a task force on colony collapse disorder, and they haven't looked at glyphosate at all.
And they won't.
And they won't.
No.
Unless we raise some fuss and come up with some more squeaky wheels. Right now, they don't have any plans to look at glyphosate, as far as we know.
Can these colonies come back?
Everything can come back, yes, over time. That's the big issue, is how quickly, and is there so much glyphosate and neonicotinoids in the environment that it'll be difficult. I mean, right now, glyphosate residues are found in 60 to 100% of the air samples and rain samples in the Midwest, 75% in Mississippi. It's found in surface water, it's found in the deep water, it's found in our blood, it's found in our urine, it's found in breast milk. So it's Monsanto's version of omnipresence, and it's being used now not only on Roundup Ready crops and also on lawns, but also it's being sprayed on wheat and barley and rye and rice and lentils and whatnot just before harvest as a ripening agent. So it's pervasive in the food supply, it's pervasive in agriculture. And at the Institute for Responsible Technology, we have a new website called RoundupRisks.com. We're about to mount a program where individuals can approach their cities, their counties. They can approach golf courses, parks, schools, homeowners associations with all of the data necessary to encourage and get a ban on Roundup. But not just Roundup, but also all pesticides, because they're totally not needed. There are alternatives that are cost-effective, and they are non-toxic.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Let's pick it up by going to Steve, truck driving in Maine. Welcome to the program, Stephen. Go ahead.
Morning, George. Morning, Jeffrey.
Morning.
I just got a couple of quick questions. Once this bill is finalized for the GMOs, how long is it going to be before the stuff is pulled from the shelf? And then, furthermore, are we going to be able to find out or see what has GMO, has been generally modified and all that stuff while it's on the shelf, or is it just going to be a guessing game at that point? I'll take my answer off to you. Thanks, guys. Great
okay,
show.
Sure thing. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, so it turns out it doesn't take a product off the shelf It just says, there's two things that relate to that. One, it says you don't have to label it GMO, even if a state legislature, like what passed in Vermont, says it is. So Vermont legislation says by July 2016, anything that contains GMOs must be labeled in that state. It would null and void that legislation. Now, 32,000 products have been verified as non-GMO by the Non-GMO Project, a third-party verifier. What this does is it asks the FDA to establish and certify a standard for non-GMO claims. And so the FDA could go in and nullify the Non-GMO Project, or they could support it. So right now, it doesn't eliminate the possibility of non-GMO claims. It just gives the FDA that jurisdiction to determine what would be a valid claim. The FDA has been mandated officially to promote GMOs. They've known for two decades that more than 50% of Americans say they would avoid eating GMO or avoid buying GMOs if they were labeled as such, and more than 90% of Americans want GMOs labeled. But they ignore the desires of 9 out of 10 Americans in order to support the economic interests of 5 or 6 GMO companies because it is their official mandate to promote GMOs. It's even in there. It was in their PowerPoint when presented to industry as what the FDA does. And so turning anything over to the FDA as a jurisdiction is not necessarily going to be in consumers' best interest. It might only be in Monsanto's best interest.
Jeffrey.
Yes.
Go ahead. Finish up. Then I have a question for you.
Just to highlight the position of the FDA, the person who was appointed by Obama as the food czar at the FDA is Michael Taylor, who was originally at the FDA, then became Monsanto's attorney, then went back to the FDA and said no testing is necessary for GMOs because he was in charge of the policy. Then he went and became Monsanto's vice president, and now he's back at the FDA as the U.S. food czar. So it's not just the hen, the fox guarding the hen house. The foxes have occupied the hen house since the beginning.
Truly a bizarre. It's been going on for a long time. The rich get richer. Can we ever really change this?
You know, I actually think that we're winning. I don't look at the metric of what's happening in Washington as the final arbiter of our success. I look at what's happening in the marketplace. It was the marketplace tipping point in Europe in 1999 that kicked GMOs out. People think that the European Union has banned GMOs. No, Nestle's and Unilever and McDonald's and Burger King in Europe banned GMOs. It's still legal to eat GMOs, to sell them, but no one does it because consumers there were concerned and it was kicked out. Now, the big question is, can we get a tipping point in the United States if we don't have mandatory labeling? The answer is yes. We had a tipping point against bovine growth hormone, Monsanto's cow drug that's linked to cancer. I was told by one of Monsanto's former scientists that 3 of his colleagues did safety studies on the milk from cows treated with their drug, found so much of a cancer-promoting hormone in the milk. Monsanto scientists refused to drink the milk unless it was organic. One bought his own cow. So by getting information out about the dangers of bovine growth hormone, we created a tipping point a few years ago, so it was kicked out of Walmart, Starbucks, Yoplait, Danone, and most American dairies, and there still is no mandatory labeling for bovine growth hormone on dairy. In fact, it's all the voluntary labeling of these dairies that say, we don't use it. So we can create a tipping point in the United States, and now we see Similac providing an infant formula that's non-GMO, and when that starts to increase in sales, then of course the other infant formulas are going to have to be non-GMO, then the Gerber and the Beech Nut, then the cereals, and we're going to see a massive divestiture of GMOs by food companies the moment they realize that using a non-GMO label will increase their market share. And so that's what's going to happen very soon. And that's what our organization, the Institute for Responsible Technology, is using in our 5-year master plan to eliminate GMOs. So even though it's a real sad day that the House passed the DARC Act, and it would be terrible if the Senate does, it's not what we don't need that in order to win.
Does organic mean non-GMO? I don't think so.
It actually does to a large extent, and here's the difference. If something is organic, it's not allowed to intentionally use a GMO. They don't require testing to see if contamination has occurred. If something uses the word non-GMO.
Well, why doesn't it just say non-GMO? You know, you go to the store and it says organic, right? Organic bananas, organic this, organic that. Why doesn't it just say non-GMO underneath it?
Well, some companies are doing that because there's been so much focus on non-GMO that people don't realize that organic includes GMOs as one of its prohibited inputs. So now you can see organic and non-GMO on the same product. But I can tell you this, that people should know that if there's a choice between organic and non-GMO verified, these days, because Roundup is sprayed on so many non-GMO crops like wheat and barley and kiwi and grapes, I would say go for the organic as the number one choice. And if you can't find organic, then at least always buy the non-GMO. But if you buy organic, you can also avoid all these other toxic chemicals, and it also has more very important phytonutrients, antioxidants, etc., because the crops are healthier.
All right. Now we go to Gary in Santa Maria, California. Go ahead, Gary.
Oh, thanks for taking that
sure
call.
Thing.
George, I'm going to be a little harsh with your guest because I believe he's being unduly Pollyannish and too much focused on 1599. The largest problem is TPP, which passed. And we've already had one and the second foot dropped. They know exactly what they're doing. The problem is the committee chairmanships of both the House and the Senate. TPP and 1599 are the death blow to this country. I don't see any way out of it. They have corrupted both political parties. It's where all the money comes from. There is virtually no stopping it at all. And in relationship to the GMO, they know darn well if they mix GMO with fluoride in your water and your toothpaste, the most highly charged negative particle on the periodic table, that very weird things can happen. They can mess with anything. They won't have to label it. If somebody does require labeling, they can sue that county. They can sue that state for unfair business practices. They have us in the jaws of their death. And you Teamsters out there, you got to get your union to grow a pair. You're going to have 300,000 truck drivers coming in from Mexico. The union is going to be sucking up their union fees, and they're going to throw you to the wayside because 300,000 union truck drivers from Mexico is going to mean more than the good truckers that are out there. People in this audience have to wake up. This is no longer game time. This is end game, and we're losing.
Well, you're probably right in most of those cases. But, Jeffrey, I don't see where you're being Pollyannish.
No, I just didn't get a chance to talk about TPP yet. Just give me a moment. First of all, thank you so much for your passion. I think, as George said, you're right in your comment that it really is very, very serious. Just to give the listeners what TPP is and why it's serious. As we talked about before, you can preempt a local government with a state government. So the state can say, the counties can't do this, or the cities can't do this. The government, and the federal government, can preempt states' rights, which is what this DARC Act is. It's saying states and other local jurisdictions cannot require labeling of GMOs. Now, what stands above federal law? Treaties. So if we sign a treaty, then we have to eviscerate our federal law in order to meet the requirements of the treaty. So because of treaties in the past, we've been challenged on voluntarily labeling tuna as dolphin safe. We've been challenged successfully on the eliminating the country of origin label on meats, because the countries that have to be labeled as where the source of the meat is, they're losing sales. And so they sued the United States saying, you can't tell customers, you can't require meat companies to disclose where the meat's coming from because we're losing money. Now, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, allows for investor-state dispute settlements. What this means is not only can countries sue, but companies can sue.
That's right.
So let's say Monsanto, as we said earlier, moves to the UK. And they say, United States, we're losing money because you're allowing non-GMO labels on food. It's voluntary, but when someone puts a non-GMO label, we lose money. And so where does it go? Where does this lawsuit go? It goes into a corporate court where three lawyers from corporations are rotated through and they make the decision. And the criteria that they use does not have to be national sovereignty, does not have to be environmental, does not have to be cultural. So, for example, it's theoretically possible under these investor-state dispute settlements to go to a local county in the South and say, you have to serve alcohol now, you have to allow gambling, you have to allow pornography, in fact, you have to allow prostitution, because our companies that are selling these are being locked out, and all of that, all of those other characteristics that normally build culture and environment and safety can be thrown out. So this concept about the Teamsters is just one piece. It basically it's not really a trade deal as much as it's a way for transnational corporations to dictate policy over federal government. And so over 600 corporate lobbyists had access to the words of this TPP, whereas our own congressmen and senators did not. And they wanted this fast track was basically saying that when it's voted on, it's either a simple up and down. You can't make any changes to it. It hasn't actually passed yet, but if it does pass, there'll be no nuances and no trade changes by the legislature allowed. So it is a very serious area, and if they do eliminate the ability to label products non-GMO, then we lose the ability to drive the tipping point very easily. And so, fortunately, I think the tipping point will happen before a TPP could be implemented, given its time frame, but it's still a disaster for every other area, and certainly possibly GMOs as well.
Jeffrey, what would you say is the single biggest factor that concerns you about GMOs?
Well, I think it's footprint, in that it affects everyone who eats, all living beings, and all future generations. The self-propagating pollution of the gene pool will outlast the effects of climate change, will outlast the effects of nuclear waste. The only thing that lasts longer than genetic pollution of the gene pool is extinction. And so this is one of the biggest problems in the world. And the biotech industry is trying to get everything out there as soon as possible, because once they patent a gene, then the clock starts ticking. They don't want to test it. They don't want to waste time. They want to put it out there. So they're putting out new combinations of organisms that could have ramifications that are simply inconceivable in our infant understanding of DNA. I mean, they're putting out double-stranded RNA technologies which can reprogram, theoretically, our entire genome just by having a meal with it, like it did with honeybees in one study that I talked about last time I was on the show. There's tremendous harm to be done. They're pushing it out there before the science is ready. It may never be ready, but it's certainly not ready now, and it'll have the footprint that'll be inherited by all future generations and affecting everyone who eats.
We're going to come back and take some final phone calls with Jeffrey Smith in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Jeffrey Smith with us here. Jeffrey, let's talk a little bit more about this new movie you're working on called Secret Ingredients. Give me the premise.
Well, there was a family that was having chronic conditions. The mother actually had surgery that went wrong, and she ended up paralyzed, and all sorts of other conditions happened from intense pain to depression, etc. The father had a breast tumor, the son had autism, there were two other sons with problems, and the medical model was basically over. She couldn't do anything else with the medical model. They had surgeries, they had medications. She started to study food, and she started to experiment on the family. And she would remove one thing like gluten and one thing like commercial dairy and notice some improvement. So she started putting the dots together. And then she learned about GMOs and Roundup. And when that was changed, that made the huge difference that we were looking for. And that actually is not a rare one-off experience. So you can actually see more information about the movie Secret Ingredients at secretingredientsmovie.com. And we're actually in the middle of production, and we're doing a crowdfunding program. So if people would like to support the film, it's being sponsored by the San Francisco Film Society. So donations are actually tax deductible. And we hope to get it out in the next few months. Now, we know that it'll be seen by a lot of people because the last movie we put out, you know, had tremendous viewing and was considered the most effective tool for changing people's diets. But I rushed that out in order to get it out for Prop 37, which is the state labeling campaign in California. And I didn't actually have the stories that I wanted, the actual people that switched to non-GMO. Now I'm besieged with stories, and we picked the best, the absolute best stories that we've seen in the last few years. So there's one family that we track, but then we also introduce other families that have noticed improvements, fertility issues, skin issues, weight problems, mood issues, children's information. And then that gets supported also by medical doctors and scientists and the information that we know about GMOs. And that gets validated or at least supported by looking at the incidence of these type of diseases in the United States rising in parallel with the increased use of GMOs and Roundup. And we're talking about very serious diseases, autism, diabetes, deaths from senile dementia, Alzheimer's, deaths from intestinal infection, irritable bowel, all sorts of cancers, schizophrenia, anemia, insomnia. And these are the things that we would predict would be going off just by looking at the biochemical effects of Roundup in the body, and in some cases, the effects of other aspects of GMOs. Roundup, of course, is sprayed on most GMOs. So it gives a very compelling case altogether, which is the kind of film that you're going to want to share with everyone you know, because it's going to basically seal the deal. We already did a test with Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, and it moved the average viewer to want to be removing GMOs before the credits rolled. Now we have actual families who've done that and individuals who've done that, so the case is far more compelling. And I've been feeling a pressure about sharing what I've learned about these testimonials because I've heard more of them than anyone on the planet. And it's now so predictable and so clear from our experience what can improve with a non-GMO and organic diet, that I just feel like this is the number one thing to get out. If there's one thing that I'm doing, you know, and I'm testifying here, I met with four elected officials today, I'm writing articles, et cetera, et cetera, I'm on this show. If there's any one thing that I can do to have the biggest impact, I think this film will do it, and then also short clips made from this film. So that's why it's so important that we get it out.
Good for you. Remember that story of the farmer who was feeding his cattle or his cows GMO corn, and they got sick?
Oh, yeah. There's a few of them. In fact, you know, when I first heard about humans switching to non-GMO diets and getting better, the question is, well, if you go non-GMO and you switch to organic, that introduces other cofactors. If we reduce processed foods, it introduces tons of cofactors. How do we know it's the GMO? So I started interviewing veterinarians and farmers who took cows and pigs off of GMO corn and put them on non-GMO corn, off of GMO soy and put them on non-GMO soy. And almost immediately, the use of medicines dropped by two-thirds or three-quarters. The behavior of the animals changed. The amount of death, the death rates decreased. The infectious rates decreased. Now, in South Africa, they had switched to non-GMO corn, and the dairy cows and the pigs all got better, but the workers in South Africa were eating the corn grown on the farm, and they were eating it as a staple three times a day. And before they switched, they were dying at large numbers. They said once or twice a month, out of 60 workers, someone would die. And they also had tremendous inflammatory issues and headaches and all sorts of pain, so that they had to actually have 20% more workers hired because so many of them were unable to work. When they started eating the non-GMO corn that was actually grown for the animals, they got better. And then they ran out of the non-GMO corn and had to buy GMO corn from the marketplace, and both the animals and the workers got sick again until they were able to secure year-round sources of non-GMO corn. So these workers were eating maybe 70% of their diet as genetically modified corn, so they were like the canaries in the coal mine. And this can tell you what might happen, you know, if we genetically engineer the rest of our food supply. But it's absolutely tragic but it's telling. And so we should not allow them to die in vain and get sick in vain. We should take heart. And that story is described in the movie Genetic Roulette.
Let's go to Paul now in Jersey City, New Jersey. Go ahead, Paul.
Good morning, Jeff and morning. George.
Hi.
It's good to speak with you. I want to start by saying something about your friend Howard Bloom, George. And
yeah.
I said this to you in a chat one day, that he does a terrible disservice when he says that genetic modification of crops is something that we have done for centuries. That is not so, because we have never tried to make crops that actually produce a toxin, like Roundup. That's one thing.
All right.
Another thing is that, you touched on this, Jeff, Monsanto, being desperate now, is trying to use something which has been shown to be so totally unpredictable that the biotech people have stayed away from it since the 1960s, and that is double-stranded RNA. Double-stranded RNA, back in the 60s, was shown to produce some very vile and unpredictable toxins. And in addition, they actually have produced a virus. So that's how desperate Monsanto is becoming. And another thing, kudos to Chipotle, among others, because if you go to Chipotle restaurants now, they prominently display in their
windows. Non-GMOs.
Right.
You're right. You want to react to some of this, Jeff?
Absolutely. I actually talked about double-stranded RNA on the show with you a few months ago. I was on the Daily Show and talked about the potato, and they interviewed me for 3.5 hours and then put in what the most silly things that they could do. So I wanted to make sure that the readers or the watchers could go and get actual data. So if you go to responsibletechnology.org and then search on double-stranded RNA, you can see a 5-minute video with a scientist and me, and you can also read a 7-page article. And the caller was absolutely right. They fed double-stranded RNA to honeybees, and it wasn't supposed to have any effect. This was an experiment to demonstrate no effect. They were looking for a control group. It turns out it altered 1,461 genes. 10% of the honeybees' genes changed their levels of expression over several weeks after a single meal of double-stranded RNA. And so the potato and the apple, which is genetically engineered with double-stranded RNA, which will be available to eat starting next year, could theoretically reprogram and change our genetic expression, because these double-stranded RNAs are tiny. They're like 7 nucleotides long or 21 nucleotides long. If they hook up and match with a complementary code on our DNA, and there's plenty of places for them to do it because it's 2 billion base pairs long, and the chances of a match is 100%. So we eat this, it gets matches to our DNA, it might change its expression, and that might change other genes' expressions, and we may be causing absolute havoc in our lives and also inheritable, because RNA effects can be inherited by the next generation. Now, Monsanto was aware of research that showed about this effect in rats and actually pushed themselves into the debate. They started sponsoring the conferences related to double-stranded RNA, disinviting the scientists that didn't agree with them, and published their own junk science to try and prove that this effect doesn't happen. And that's been exposed, but they have a lot of money, and they're trying to pretend that double-stranded RNA has no effect. So that information is on our website, and thank you for bringing that up. The other point is, you're absolutely right, genetic engineering is not a simple extension of natural breeding. That's a public relations spin.
How old is genetic manipulation?
It started in the 70s, but really it hit our food supply in 1994 with a tomato, which was taken off the market within 3 years, but 96, the soy and the corn and the canola and the cotton started making their way into our agriculture. So the technology is in the 70s, but the eating of it started in the mid-90s. We also had bovine growth hormone in 94, but then in 1984 or so, there was a company in Japan that started to genetically engineer bacteria to produce L-tryptophan, a supplement, more economically. And what happened was, the process of genetic engineering creates surprise.
That was a disaster.
Yeah, over about 100 people died, about 5,000 to 10,000 fell sick or permanently disabled, and it was clear that genetic engineering was almost certainly the cause of this, and that cause was covered up by the FDA. They They testified before Congress, never mentioning that the tryptophan was genetically engineered, blamed it generically on this safe amino acid, saying, oh, it must be all tryptophan, took all tryptophan off the market, which paved the way for Prozac sales, because L-tryptophan was the big competitor to Prozac. So they used the excuse of this genetically engineered epidemic to create some bizarre excuse to take all tryptophan off the market in order to basically pave the way for a pharmaceutical.
Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. It's our friend Crunchy. Welcome to the show, Crunchy.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for the plug for Christian with the black pepper, by the way.
Sure thing.
Hey, note that old story of Anki and Anel. Genetic bastards. But I wanted to just throw that in for a laugh. But,
uh-huh.
Thank you very much. Kidney Jeffrey, flush this stuff out of your system. Like ginger, like using natural ginger and
gosh, you know, once you eat it, I think you've got it, Jeffrey.
Well, here's an interesting thing. They had mice that were fed Roundup Ready soybeans for 8 months, and they had damage to their testicles, including the young sperm cells, to their pancreas, and to their liver. Anywhere they checked, they found damage. They took a subset of those mice and then put them on non-GMO soybeans, and they started to reverse. So that was with the animals. And we see with anecdotal evidence and case studies, it's the same with humans and pets and livestock. There is a reversal of a lot of the problems. Now, sometimes if you look at what Roundup can do and what GMOs can do, they might create gut holes in the walls of the intestines. They might cause dysbiosis, which is the imbalance of gut bacteria. They might deplete minerals in the system. There's a lot of things that it can do that may need specific treatment. So when I talk to some doctors, they say for people who have very serious issues, they may not only remove, you know, GMOs, but do all sorts of things with probiotics and prebiotics and mineral supplements and whatnot, and hormonal imbalances as well. If some people have mild symptoms, then they change the diet, they can just get better by switching to an organic diet and nothing else happens. Now, some of the genes that are inserted into the DNA of the crops might transfer into the DNA of the bacteria living inside our intestines. This was confirmed, and so it means that if that gene from a Roundup Ready soybean, which is what they tested, transfers to our gut bacteria and continues to function, it means it's creating a genetically modified protein maybe 24/7 around the clock, even long after we stop eating Roundup Ready soybeans. And so this is a very scary concept. We talk about it in the films, but it's not been thoroughly examined, but it's a very serious issue. Now, so we can't say for sure that it's happening. We can't say for sure how to clean it up, but I've actually spoken to thousands of healthcare professionals who are prescribing non-GMO diets, and I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing. And if you go on to responsibletechnology.org, we'll be releasing very, very soon some information to help people heal from the influence of GMOs from doctors who've created some things that I think you want to know about. I can't talk about it yet. We've just had discussions mm-hmm. this week. There's a lot going on.
Jeffrey, before we take final calls, I want to thank you and attorney Jonathan E. Mord for really making a major effort to try to protect us, to protect all of us. And I appreciate that.
Thank you, George. I really appreciate your sentiments. And I'll tell you, I'm excited about what we're seeing. It's getting better. We are starting to move the needle big time in the marketplace, and we could use people's help.
Let's go to Jeremy, truck driving in Nebraska. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Hey, no, I'm going to have to disagree with the gentleman from Jersey City.
Okay.
Pretty much everything we do consume food-wise is genetically modified. The way I look at it, though, is there is a difference between, like, the way a rancher would do it and the way, like, Monsanto's do it.
Mm-hmm.
But everything we eat is genetically modified.
Explain that a little bit more. Only have about a minute and a half left.
Well, I can do it, actually.
All right, Jeffrey, go ahead.
It's really a matter of terminology. If you say genetically altered, yeah, if you cross wheat so that you create more gluten and sell it in the United States as American wheat, you can call that genetically altered, you can call that genetically modified. We just use a different term for genetic modification. We use the term genetic modification for taking genes from one species, putting millions of copies into a gun, shooting that gun into a plate of cells, cloning those cells into a plant, and that's a form of genetic engineering that could never happen naturally and doesn't happen on the ranch or the farm. So it's really just a matter of terminology. So when we're talking about transgenics, transferring genes between species or kingdoms, that's what we're talking about as particular risks. If you look at the FDA memos back from the 90s, they say the process of genetic engineering is different than traditional breeding and leads to different risks. And they wanted lots of studies, they wanted human studies, and what they got was Michael Taylor, Monsanto's attorney in charge of the policy. They got no required studies. So they ignored the science, they ignored the scientists, and put GMOs in the market without the studies that were needed.
The website you want to look at is secretingredientsmovie.com. Jeffrey, thanks again. Up next, we're going to be talking about magic, mysticism, evil. We've got it all. Don't go away.